Thank you very much. Thanks to the organizers and Jack for making all this possible. And because it's a birthday celebration, so you cannot avoid flowers. And it's better to have lots of flowers. And at the moment I have drawn one. This is a flower, a fatu flower, which is not really the one you think. Usually you draw attracting petals. These are not attracting, but these are called sepals. So each sepal is fully environed by your local dynamics. The dynamics just rotate from one side to the other side. So the curve is, and the attracting axis goes like this. So when you have, this is like when you have a fat rabbit, you want to know if you can make it into something less fat. And like this, in this case, for example, you want to make the multiplicity of this zero simpler by splitting it into at least two zeros. So one way to do is that I choose two sepals of different orientation, and then I just, it's like a string. Yes, I got this from my landlady. That was the eight. So what you do, you just pull it up and it becomes a line. And that's what you would see, that one. I hope you have seen the operation. So this is a surgery. Well, you can see it topologically. What's inside of the white petal disappeared. The whole white thing just becomes a line. And what is outside, whatever outside was kept. So the structure outside of the white sepal were kept. And then I get new local dynamical system with two fixed points with lower multiplicity. And of course you can choose to, rather than choose one pair, you can choose several pairs. As long as they don't cross, you can decide either to do one after the other to make it simpler and simpler, or decide to do simultaneously several, there's a name, it's called plumbing. You call it plumb. Well, topologically it's just like that, and then to make it, it's not difficult to make this new surface a Riemann surface and a new dynamical system. If it was holomorphic, the new local dynamical system is still holomorphic. So what we want to do is, you started from a rational map which is globally holomorphic, and you want to do this kind of simple operation, and then to obtain rational maps related to this kind of surgery. And of course, if you do this locally, you can make it holomorphic and never make it globally holomorphic, because the white part has pre-images. And this operation makes the white flower disappear, so you have to do something on the pre-image. On the pre-image, the only thing you can do is just to make the local homeomorphism, which is topological, and then you cannot, well, you can do finite many steps to make it holomorphic, but you can never do it for the whole full pullback. And that's where you have to call Thurston. That is the title. Well, more than Thurston. Thurston did the work, this kind of operation, constructed. These are the combinatorial description of a rational map. And once you have that combinatorics, you want to see if it is realizable by an analytic object, a rational map. And Thurston did that to the case where the critical points has, all critical points have finite orbits. That's called post-critically finite case, and that case helped already to prove, for example, the monotonicity conjecture and many other applications. But to do this kind of parabolic case, you need to extend that theorem, and I want to present the work of Cui. You have to pronounce it T-S-U-I, who has set up the whole program to extend certain theorem to this setting. And for some reason, I've been involved in that project recently. So the theorem, if you have never seen it, it will be hard. Otherwise, it's nearly the same as the original certain theorem. So the setup is that I will start from something that is not pure, it's not rational math, but has some good properties. It's called the geometrically finite semi-rational map. Where is the sticker? You take the original closure of the post-critical set, and then you look at the cluster set, the accumulation set. You want this thing to be finite and non-empty. If it's empty, then you go to the surface case. And then you assume that this map, which is the global branch covering, should be holomorphic in the neighborhood of this accumulation set. And then on this, when they are holomorphic, they are the accumulation is for the environment. So you can look at the periodic orbits inside. And you want the periodic orbits inside of this cycle are all either attracting or parabolic. So that's really the way to think of geometrically finite rational maps, where you allow attracting cycles, parabolic cycles, pre-periodic critical points, and super-attracting cycles, and nothing else. So this is the setup. And then you assume this thing has no obstructions that I will try to explain later on, but not now. So this is a topological obstruction, just purely by looking at the curves. This is not an analytical one, but for some reason, that's due to certain, once you have this nearly topological setup with no topological obstruction, then you can really realize this as a rational map in a slightly weak sense, in the sense that this map is almost conjugate to a rational map. And this conjugation has to be modified by a homeomorphism, which is isotopic to identity relative to the post-critical set. But because I want to keep the holomorphic structure I had to start with, I have to find at first a basic set, which is just a collection of attracting disks that map inside, and a collection of parabolic attraction petals, not the staples. So for each parabolic point, you choose a full collection of parabolic staples, petals, and a full collection of attracting disks. And that caps the important part is that I have several critical points go inside, and they have a certain phase structure, or a lot of critical points inside. And this local holomorphic structure keeps that information. What's the relative position of your two critical orbits sitting in your attracting basin? And I want that information to be kept. It means that when I do my isotopy, I want this isotopy to be identity on this basic set, so that really all these points are fixed. And then when I do my conjugacy, I want the conjugacy to be holomorphic on the basic set. And this is the weakly, the combinatorial is called combinatorially equivalent to a rational map. So you can take two such maps and define it as a combinatorial equivalent. It is an equivalence relation. What you are looking is that in which class you can find a rational map. And the theorem says that with these conditions there is a unique one. Moreover, this one does not come from somewhere that magically nobody knows, that you can put your hand on this map by looking such kind of program, diagram. It's called a certain algorithm, which is in the original proof of certain, is that he start from the branch covering, and you put this is the Riemann sphere here, and you put the standard complex structure on that, and then you start to pull back. You really need the things pulled back by charge. And once you pull back, you get a sequence of Riemann surfaces homeomorphic to the Riemann sphere. You use the uniformization and send them back to the complex, to the Riemann sphere. And then each time you get really a sequence of rational maps. And then if you normalize your uniformization properly, certain theorem says that this sequence of maps should converge in the isotopy class, in the Techmiller space of the sphere marked by this point. And a certain algorithm says that is this sequence of rational maps really converge to the one you're looking for. And this was already there is a particular way to see it using spiders that you can look at in the paper of Hubbard and Schlesinger. So that's about the okay, so I have explained this. Okay, there are two theorems. The first one is about existence. The second one is control of distortion. Then you can say that when I do this kind of thing, this kind of operation, you want to say that if I make a sequence of operations, I'm getting closer and closer. I'm not far away from my original dynamics. And this kind of closing property needs to some control of distortion. And that was the second theorem. And that has nothing to do with, it's not really Pearson theorem. So it says it does not have to be geometrically finite. You can have non-recurrent, that works also. It says that you take finite many points. You take a periodic cycle or periodic point, and then you take a marked disk around them. In the marked disk, you have automatically marked a smaller disk by the conformal for the radius relative to your disk, by the equipotential inside of your disk. And then you have a constant that depends only on the radius and nothing else, or on the map. And then for every integer, every function that's defined on the nth full byte of R neighborhood, this univalent function has a bounded distortion, and that distortion depends only on R and not on the choice of N and on the choice of your univalent function phi. And when I say distortion, what I want to measure is this distance to Möbius maps. You can see that when R goes to zero, this neighborhood gets smaller and smaller. So the domain of definition of your phi gets closer and closer to C, to C bar, and you really expect this function to be closer and closer to a globally defined univalent map. And of course, so this map should be somehow controlled, its distance to Möbius transformation should be controlled by R, but the power of this theorem is that it says it's only independent, the control you get independent of the choice of phi. And concretely, there are several ways to control the distortion. The easiest way is to you normalize so that you just compare with the identity in the spherical matrix. But this is very difficult to estimate, so you have to turn it into conformal invariants. One of them is very close to what we have seen yesterday, the Golden inequality, except this one has absolute value inside. Maybe the one I heard yesterday would help to simplify from this step to that step. Okay. So I want to say something that I can do with these two theorems before saying the idea of proofs. So the application of these two theorems plus easy surgeries. Now, once you have these two theorems, you can play with this kind of surgeries. And I will show another one. I will call it, I don't know, or there's some other kind of surgery, you see. That the one application is that you can give a new proof of Dodi Hubbard's theorem of convergence of pre-periodic rays. There's no periodic, only pre-periodic rays of Mandelbrot set. And it goes, of course, beyond that. You can reprove Keevy's theorem for polynomials, and you can do for rational maps. If you have accessible points, repelling accessible points on the boundary of some basin, you can push it, make it landing in the parameter space. So that's what I wanted to say here. The proof I will show a little bit later, if you have time, uses its intrinsic proof, so it does not use the usual technique that you take a parameter array, you have one dimensional parameter space, and you know the accumulation set is connected. And then for some reason, you try to say that the accumulation set is also discrete, and that's way too long. And this method depends heavily on the topology, on the dimension of your parameter space, which is, and depends, some of the proofs also depend on the combinatorics of the arrays, how the periodic arrays are length. And this proof can provide a more intrinsic and local proof locally, I mean just local deformations to, for the landings of these rays. And the second application would be this kind of things. If you have a parabolic map, you want to show that, like you have a fat rabbit, you know, fat rabbit in the parameter space is in two hyperbolic components, one on top, one below, and then you just deform in, you know perfectly what the Julia set looks like, because if you go up, you go to a less fat rabbit. If you go down, it looks, it's a Jordan curve, but it looks very close to a rabbit, getting closer. And all this, you know, you can just, all this one, this is, open the parabolic a little bit, not completely. You can do that by now, you can just, because this thing you can construct easily to get a semi-rational map, which is locally holomorphic, and these are the accumulation size of a post-critical set. By my construction, the surface is holomorphic, is analytic, and the dynamics is holomorphic near the point I'm interested in. And on the pullback, who cares? Then you just run a certain algorithm, you'll get a rational map. And then a third of, application would be pinching deformations. And the fourth one is that you can just start this through the three start from rational maps, you do deformation and you get new rational maps. This fourth one is more different. You just take abstract tree, Hubbard tree for example, and then you plug in some information and then you can build up hyperbolic rational map with disconnected Julia sets by looking at the Markov matrix where you put on your tree. And I want to say that the number two answers a question of Jack, who asked if you have a, usually when you have a parabolic point, can you promote your parabolic point into a attracting one without changing the topology of the Julia set, like the fat rabbit to non-fat rabbit? And this question, beyond this, I think later was, there are solutions by Kawahira and Hysinski using a method of Shishigura. But there are all assumptions. Here also we have assumption of geometrically finite. Beyond geometrically finite, it's still open, I think. Yes? Even in Kawahira's case. Maybe goes to non-recurrent, I don't know. Anyway, so it's still open. If you have a lot of non-hyperbolicity elsewhere, somewhere you have parabolic point, are you free to perturb it locally to get to attracting and without changing the outer dynamical system? And that at least now we can do by two different methods. So the theorem is true that you can do it for geometrically finite case.
So in your method here, you're extending it for geometrically finite, but are you saying that you can actually get it, you know, say, let's say the number two for parabolic,
yes,
not referring to it?
Some of them, yes.
Does this recover all of the cases that Peter's argument, separate argument gave?
Well, let me say, I have checked only for the Mandelbrot set. I can take a non-recurrent parameter. I can show that external ray land there by this purely local method.
Oh, no, no, I mean the parabolic.
Yeah, the parabolic is, I think it's the same, yeah. I'd like to check. It all depends how powerful the second theorem is, too. And to deform into hyperbolic one. Ah, no. No, 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 no. When you deform, I want, after deformation, it should be geometrically finite. So, to apply theorem A, then go to from, go backwards, I need theorem B, and that I can go up beyond. See, when you take a non-recurrent point on the boundary of Mandelbrot set, I perturb it so that it goes outside, and then it's hyperbolic. Then I can apply the theorem. And going backwards is okay. Okay, so I want to start to give some idea of the proof, and I don't know if I have time to talk about how to do the application. So this is exactly the plumbing surgery that we have learned from reading Matienko. And you do plumbing, then you get a new dynamical system which has attracting 6 points and repelling 6 points. And then there's a second operation. Well, from here to there, you want to go backwards. There's one thing is that you either you do quasi-conformal deformation, and then your quasi-conformal is going to degenerate at limit. These are called pinching deformations, and that appeared already in the literature in Goldberg and Linda King and Martienko's paper. Otherwise, you can also do surgery. What you do is that you cut off this line, you plug in the complex structure inside, and you produce a new Riemann surface, a new dynamical system, which both ways. So this surgery can do both ways. And how do you get the theorem A, which says that probably semi-rational maps are realizable, that in fact that one relies on the hyperbolic version of that theorem, which says that if you don't have hyperbolics, you can do the same theorem. And how do you do from, now I try to explain, how do you do from a hyperbolic version to the existence part of the parabolic version. And there's another, there are two parts, there are three parts. There are theorem, there's unicity and also convergence of certain algorithms. That was a part. The hardest part is to show the existence of a rational map. So you start your rational map with a parabolic point. The first thing you do the plumbing surgery. What you do, plumbing, you open all the neighbor samples so that you get a star, like from the fat rabbit to the non-fat rabbit.
And exactly what you're proving. When are you proving? What's the theorem? I'm in the middle of the theorem, and I don't know what the theorem is.
Okay. Actually, I go back to the theorem.
Well, there's been a lot of theorems. I don't know which one it was.
I have only one. I have only two.
Okay, so there's a version of Thurston's theorem.
Yes. I want to explain how to go from hyperbolic to parabolic. I does not say that I have proved the hyperbolic. Hyperbolic I want to show later.
Oh, so you're doing the case when the cluster set contains parabolic.
Yes, exactly.
Assuming the case where you have hyperbolic, where you know how to prove the
hyperbolic. Exactly.
Okay.
You're happy?
Yeah, it wasn't crystal clear that that was what you were proving.
Well, the existence part, I see there's three parts, there existence, unicity, and convergence. Okay, now these two are part. So the existence part is I'm trying to show how to do from the existence part of the non-parabolic one to the existence with parabolic.
Okay.
So that's two different difficulties.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, now I know what we're discussing.
Thank you for your question. Maybe I got lost the... more than half of the audience. So that was the logic. I want to show the existence part of this with parabolics, and I want to say that this follows from the hyperbolic version of that, and together with a control of distortion. And later I'm going to show the, try to explain how to prove that. I'm going to state a new theorem, proposition C, which I haven't stated. So I just want to explain this part, assuming that you know how to do it for hyperbolic. What you do is that you start from a map that has parabolics. You do local plumbing. You plumb out all the parabolic petals. Then you get something that is purely hyperbolic. So
I think I could ask you to
yes.
explain what plumb out all the hyperbolic parabolic. I mean, I do not have to know what those
are. Okay. Do I need some light on? Oh, no, I think I have a plumb out, okay. You like the fat rabbit?
Yes, I like the fat rabbit.
Okay. So, fat rabbit, I would draw it like this. If you recognize it, I need another color. No, this... So if you want to see the Julia set, it is here. That's 1 year. No, I drew it wrong. Sorry. But the number is correct. Where is my... So that's 1 year, and that's the other one. And then you have the body is here. Are you happy with that?
Yes.
Okay. So this thing is my figure 8. I do plumbing so that this becomes an arc. That's the one explained on the left. Okay? When I do that, because it's periodic, I have to do three times altogether. So this, the yellow, the red one become also an arc. the new...
Coming in arc means what? I can see a topological surgery.
Yes.
Are you changing the math also, or are you finding a math?
Locally, I have changed the complex structure, and the math follows automatically.
Okay.
You want to see how I change the complex structure?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, the cauliflower is better. Okay? The cauliflower is what is written there on top. You have only one like this. That's your parabolic point. And then you take it as a continuum. You take the outside, you take the Riemann mapping to the outside of unit disk. Are you happy with that? Okay. But outside you have your dynamical system, you keep that. So the dynamical system does this. Right? And here you see still the same structure. So I'm just conjugating the outside dynamics to the outside. It's holomorphic. And now the next thing is to glue. I do the gluing of this and the red side disappeared. So I get something like that. And the outside dynamical system is still there. And this become attracting, this become repelling. And locally, I have just built a new Riemann surface. So everything was holomorphic to start with. The new dynamical system is still holomorphic. The only trouble I have would be at the pre-image of that one. That only modified topologically to get a semi-rational map. Okay, when you have rabbits, you just pull out the 3 years, the six sub-years, and then you get a starlight arc. That's called starlight plombing. And you get star. Then you agree you get hyperbolic. This one is hyperbolic now because I have taken off all the parabolicity. And this hyperbolic one, I use my hyperbolic version to say that this is certain equivalent to some hyperbolic rational map. Okay? And this hyperbolic rational map has that kind of property. Now I have to go back to produce a parabolic rational map. And that one, I start to do quasi-conformal deformations to shrink that back arc smaller and smaller back to a point. And to do the quasi-conformal deformation is very easy. You just put some complex structure. What's hard part is to show actually this path converge, because you go beyond of quasi-conformal at the limit, that this path really converge to a rational map you are expecting for. And that's where you need estimates. That I didn't explain, and I didn't state the theorem. But there are people, Sean Bullett, I don't know, and Peter Hasinski, they know very well this technique. So, okay?
Sean Bullett is actually in your budget.
Is he there?
Possibly. The only person here who actually knows his technique.
He's hiding? No, oh, he's there. Okay. So what should I do? Should I go on explain how to prove the hyperbolic version or explain how to do applications?
Explain how to do the hyperbolic version. My technique.
Okay. No objection.
When you're reproving, you're going to reproduce the hyperbolic version of what?
Of this with disconnected Julia set, with accumulated set non-empty. My assumption is that the accumulated set, the cluster set is non. So I have attracting periodic points with infinite post-critical set.
Right.
Okay. So the proof of the hyperbolic thing, should I go back to my theorem, Hubbard?
I'm not in charge. I'm just in charge of complaining.
No, we
want to do.
I know what
you're doing. So, just assume you have a semi-rational map without parabolic points. You have only attracting periodic cycle, and that attracts because when you have semi-rational map, you have critical points. They're topological notion. They're critical accumulates. To this attracting cycle, and locally you have a conformal structure, around the cycles, and you want to keep that structure and do isotopy and to produce a rational map keeping that structure after isotopy. So the U is my neighbor of where is it? Attracting cycle. Now it's U just collection of virtual disks or linearizing disks around the attracting basin, has no more parabolics, and assume it has no obstruction. So the first thing to do is to make G quasi-regular. I mean, that's very easy, just do a little bit isotopy, just think the map is quasi-regular. And the next thing is to cut off U and look at the complement. It's like when you try to construct a polynomial, you have infinity, you have certain critical points going there, U is a neighborhood of infinity. And what you are interested in is the Julia set. So you take the complement. L is the complement. And then you start to pull back. When you pull back, you're heading down to your virtual Julia set. Right?
When you're pulling back, it's the complex structure?
No. Just the pieces. I'm doing puzzles now.
Oh, okay.
Because now this L, L0, L1, LN, and each piece is compactly contained, each level is compactly contained in the previous level, and then each piece is mapped to a piece of the previous level. You really have this double version of a tableau. And I want to induce a new map that I want to put complex structure. So I want to go to Julia set C somewhere, I want to stop at some point, and then just put a new complex structure here. That for the new map, this is going to be holomorphic, and then I'm going to glue the two complex structures using alpha spells. And this part is the inducing part. So what do? I will iterate backwards finite many times until that, I think I have done that. I have explained this to Pierce and he said it was not clear. Sorry, it's here. So I have to say that a curve is essential if it separates the post-critical set. And the boundaries are a lot of each Li has a lot of pieces, and each piece has a lot of boundary curves, but they are all Jordan curves because I can avoid post-critical set. And I would say a Jordan curve is essential if it separates this enlarged post-critical set, which is just this U. U is just finite many dots, big spots. And then there are some post-critical set left. So that's my new the red part. And I would say that the union, because the L, N are all nested, so the curves are all disjoint. Now you look at the total number of homotopy class relative to the post-critical set is increasing because I'm adding more and more disjoint curves each time I take pullback. And at some moment, yes, and they are disjoint, so there are some moment this thing become constant. And that I start to, it's not enough, I have to go a little bit further. What I want is to there is an N. You can see that the next step can still happen. The next piece cannot, this cannot happen. When I say that I don't create a new homotopy class, I cannot create this new, this green curve in the middle. Okay, the next level piece is not allowed to sit inside like this and with a curve doing like that, because that curve has a new homotopy class. So this is just too fun and many backward pull back you will get that. So what you will really have is this kind of thing occurs. The only thing that you are allowed to is that one. You just reduce a little bit your global piece was the blue one. So that was the previous level piece. The next level you can have shrink a little bit on each side of this essential boundary curves, and the non-essential one you don't care that much.
Why is that one non-essential?
Because I put the red spots all outside. The post-critical side I have
put the blue curves are just those, the blue curves are just
blue curves inside, the green curves are just for decoration.
Yes. Okay. Just to show you have peripheral boundary curves. And the red ones are all on the corners.
Okay. I was confused about your previous slide. You were saying that when the deltoid runs out, it's impossible. I mean, I don't think that violates your models of opinions, because I just think maybe you can't get that by dynamic. Is that what you mean?
No, no, because you have created a new homotopy class, and this class was not there. See, this...
Well, it happens that where the degree of volume may not. It may happen that you... I have a clear number of homotopy classes all the time. This could happen. You're saying that
eventually it will not happen. At the beginning it was happening, but for n greater... I did say for n greater than n plus 1, n 1, then this will never happen. This will not happen.
There's still one more control room. This could actually...
Yes, topologically you can see that at the beginning, but this thing would eventually disappear. So the next step, the only thing that can appear is this kind of thing. So you got just, and this piece are the complicated ones. So I will say that for each I have to split it into three different types. Each puzzle level has three different types of the piece. There are the zero top type piece, which are just homotopic to a new curve. You might have a lot of curves, but all the particular sides are in one kinetic component in the complement. Or you have annular type, you have only two boundary curves that are essential, the others are non-essential. Or you have at least three essential boundary curves. So I'm really interested in the essential topology of the pieces, not really the topology, not really the dynamics at the moment, just looking at the essential boundary curves. And these are the ones that I'm interested in. What I say is that if I start from this level, then the total number of bigger than three pieces is increasing, because each time inside I have to put one exactly of the same homotopic type. And that means that, no, should I say it again? It was not clear. Okay. Why it is increasing, decreasing at this moment? Because each time if I have a look at the n plus 1 level piece, greater than 3 is something, a big constraint on the topology. So this is the level n plus 1 piece that you have curve that this is essential. Four essential boundary curves, let's say, and then you have this corner, and the red spots outside. These four essential boundary curves. You know, each one is parallel or is homotopic to a curve of a previous level. And this one, each piece, you take this E is contained in the topology, a piece Q of the previous level. What's the topology of this one? What is the essential topology of this one? How many essential boundary curves? You cannot have two if this one has four. E is a piece, it's a kinetic component of level n plus 1. And that one, I assume it has at least three essential boundary curves. And this one, the ones I'm counting, the others I don't care. And if it has that, here I have drawn with four, and then each boundary curve, I mean, this is also sitting as a puzzle piece, it sits on the previous level piece. So I will show a picture. Wow. It's really zero. I mean, this thing does not separate the post-crystal set. There's no essential boundary curve. It's clear, right? I lost all my chalk. Oh, it's here. Okay. So this one sits on a boundary curve, on a new piece, on a larger piece. And this piece, how many essential boundary curves can I have? You see, the post-critical sets are here. Finally, many of them. because I'm not allowed to increase the homology. I have to have some boundary curve on this side, and I can have only this one and that one, which looks like you go. You cannot have two, right?
So you're saying if the curve is essential in n plus 1, then its preimage is essential in n.
I'm not talking about dynamics. I'm just talking about topology. This piece is sitting inside of a previous level piece. I'm just looking at the boundary of the previous level piece. The previous level piece, because this curve, I mean, it's a subset. The white piece. Dear, tell me, Todd. the white piece is a subset of a green piece. Okay, and the white boundary has only four essential boundary curves. All the other, there might be non-essential ones in there for decoration.
Why couldn't there be three or four green curves over on the other side of that white curve?
I can show it if you like. Like this. You can have a green one like this. Okay. Now you look at the homotopic class between this one and that one. Are they homotopic relative to red? So you have no red here. So this thing is just you don't see. This is non-essential. It is, yeah, the essential, there's only one. You have only corner neighborhoods if you look at the only essential topology. That was the trick. They say that from that point. Sure. No, I'm going to induce a new map and say that for that new map, I'm going to put a complex, a new map that's only defined on the neighborhood of the Julia set. And I'm going to say that my work is to now to put a complex structure on that new map. And now certain obstruction will come later from that for that map. So my new ask is that after certain iterates, this number of pieces, the essential with at least three boundary curve pieces would become constant. Because now this time it means that the number, so this says that each E in L n plus 1, I'll say n plus 1, greater than 3 is contained in Q, which is in the previous level, has also at least 3 boundary curves. It cannot have 2 at least. And can you have more than in this piece? Can you, how many sub pieces can you have? Because the boundaries are look like that. So where are the other green white pieces? So this is the green is the level n plus 1, and the white is the level, no, green is level n. Yeah, this is level n. And I might have other white pieces sitting there, right? The white pieces are all disjoint, but sitting inside of this Q. Q, this is the Q. Q is this big part. The big pillow cutting off the two small corners. And where can I have the other white piece? I can have here or here. Show you a picture. Yeah. That would be the only possibility to have the black ones are the previous level and the shaded ones are the next level pieces. So you can see that if this one, the boundary, essential boundary curve are parallel to that one, then inside you can have only annuli. You can not have two pieces with at least three boundary essential boundary curves sitting inside of the same piece with at least three boundary curves. That's all my induction was to objective. My objective was to hold that each piece, complicated piece, has unique sub-piece of next level with exactly the same essential topology. By doing this simple argument, which is difficult to explain. It is clear.
But the argument is plain topology and topology.
Yeah, at the moment it's only plain topology and then the white spots are finite. I haven't used dynamic yet. So I want to just reduce this case, and then I get a new dynamical system. I start to get that one. It is okay. So, yes. Okay, now I come to the case that my math F was, when I go to this level N, where each essential less more than three piece has a unique essential more than three piece, that one I will fill in all the holes. So there are essential, inessential parts, I will fill in, I take it piece by piece, each piece I fill in the holes and take union of these pieces. And that will be the filling of that piece. That just to simplify, see, there are trivial holes that you don't want them. And then in the end, the Q, after filling, you will get, in the beginning, Q might have a lot of boundary curves, but only three essential ones. But after filling, you just see them, and you don't see the others. And this would be my new Ln space. This is the filling. I take piece by piece, I fill in all the holes, and take union of them together. Not yet, later. At the moment, I'm just obtained a new a neighborhood of my Julia set. And then I pull back that neighborhood once by my dynamics and the restriction, and that's my new dynamical system. I'm only looking at this local dynamical system defined on the neighborhood of a Julia set. And now all the boundary curves are essential. And when I take the pre-image, they're all parallel or homotopy to previous one, except in the annuli case that you don't have. And this new map, locally, it still has that. If you look at the boundary multi-curve, you look at backwards, you still have this certain property that it has no certain obstruction.
You're filling in the space, but how do you fill the map? In a trivial way?
No, the map was there. I didn't touch the map. I just...
No, but if you're filling in, you're gluing something into your space, so you have to say what's happening with the map.
Yeah, I just filled in this space, and then I take this map, I start to pull backwards. But something I have to prove is that this thing is still a subset of that one. And that's quite easy. No, this is because what you're filling has no postcritical sets. So the backward disks are all disks disjoint from postcritical set. So this thing sits automatically in the filling of the next level piece, which is already inside of that.
What is the fill? I'm sorry, I'm confused.
Okay, I will.
What is the fill?
I'll go backwards. So look at that piece. That Q piece has four essential boundary curves and two non-essential ones. And I'm going to ignore that non-essential ones. I just think it as a piece bounded by four boundary curves. So I have enlarged that piece. The puzzle has been changed. In the beginning, the puzzle is the outside of the six boundary curves, what is sitting there. When I erase that one, I have only four boundary curves. Yes, filling all the holes that I don't see the red spots. And then I got a new puzzle. I start to do pullback of that one. And just one, just pull back one. And that puzzle has the good property that each complicated type has a unique, the same complicated type sitting inside. The annular type are different. Yes.
What is the result of this construction? Is the quadrilateral map that's still equivalent to the square plus 100?
Yes.
But somehow it's better than the original one, or else you wouldn't have done this step. So what's the difference?
The difference is that you might not see if you're in your z square plus 100. You might do some topological deformation that you don't see that. It's not globally holomorphic, right? You might start even from a semi-rational map. So my starting point is a semi-rational map. You can just do use this is the holomorphic part, which looks exactly, which is, you just take this map. Okay? And then here you just glue in any topological one. which makes a branch covering. And this thing is isotopic to Z squared plus 100. The isotope keeps this complex structure there. So your escaping critical point still has the same escaping coordinate in the Birch coordinate.
Well, what you're saying is that if it was really Z squared plus 100 and there were holomorphic, you probably wouldn't do this construction.
I would do the same, but it's a lot simpler. I won't have the pieces with a lot of essential boundary curves. In the end, I have only the piece are all zero type pieces. In the end, there's no more particle set here.
If you're linear bidirectional
map,
no. Rational
no, but you use rational map to understand the topology. I mean, it's the same kind of topology. So that was his question, I think.
I don't know.
Like,
I don't
want to
take
your
time
though. Oh. So
maybe,
I just...
we should make some major sort of round up here because time is...
Okay. So I just finished to say that the final result is to say that for this reduced map, which is defined locally, then I can put a nice complex structure on that. After isotopy, this map is holomorphic. And that's the central theorem of the whole theory, which says that for such kind of, after simplifying topology enough, then you can find a complex structure on this new neighborhood, the starting point of new puzzle, and then you can isotopic your map to some new one, such that this, after slight isotopy, you get a map from the subset to this puzzle, which is holomorphic. And that was the point. Once you get that, you can glue the two piece of holomorphic structure, you get a rational map by quasi-conformal surgery. So how do you make that holomorphic? And that you use, if you have this piece, you have a unique subpiece that has the same topology, then you use Thurston. Thurston gives you the complex structure, which says that, oh, okay. So for that piece, you can complete it to make a post-critical finite. You just look at the local map, that's why I don't want G, I only want F, because F I'm going to complete it differently to get post-critical finite branch covering. And then I use Thurston to get a complex structure. And that complex structure is not good enough. I have to use Shishigura's trick to have the complex structure that the isotopy keeps this black curve environment, because I don't want to make the certain isotopy might make my green curve outside, then I cannot glue back my original structure. And with that Shishigura trick, I can, the trouble is out to put all the boundary, the lot of annuli piece that I have to put in, and I have to play with the moduli of the annuli. And that is like, oh, you have all annuli, and when you look at carefully the surface matrix, you look at the eigenvalue, that will tell you how to put in the structure. The easiest exercise is assume you have only annuli. Suppose for this big F, you have only annuli, and then inside you have finite many annuli, which has this one sitting there, and it's mapped there with a certain degree, then you build up certain metrics. If that one has leading eigenvalue 1, then you can make this holomorphic. And that's the only thing you need to do after this thing. Okay, I think it's... You're aware